Jacob Sions. Jacob was born in Chicago and raised in Cicero, Illinois. Jacob holds a BA, excuse me, in creative writing with a specialization in poetry from Columbia College in Chicago. His poetry has appeared in Poetry, Tri-Quarterly, Pinwheel, and other journals. A Canto Mundo Fellow, he has also been the recipient of a Letras Latinas residency and a Ruth Lilly Poetry Fellowship. Oh. He works at a library. Welcome, Jacob.
I want to say thanks to Kirsten and Emily and everyone at Spoon River and everyone who helped put this together. It's really great. It's a beautiful home here, and I had fun exploring it earlier in the day. And, like Monica mentioned about sort of reading new poems, I'm going to read some new poems. I mean, it's all going to be new to you for the most part, but for me, the first couple are going to be new, and it's a way to sort of test the waters and test to see how they're going. So I've been trying to write like a poem a day for National Poetry Month, not really succeeding that well. Doing pretty good though. And I've had these poems in the persona of this bachelor, and so a lot of these poems have the title or the word bachelor in the title. So this is In the Time of the Bachelor. Oh, the joy, the comfort of wearing pajama pants all day long, nesting on the couch with a bag of potato chips in your lap, the crumbs falling onto your hoodie like sad confetti. It is a day of not showering, of letting the dirt coalesce, allowing your nose hairs to grow wild until you can only mouth breathe. All that is in your fridge is lunch meat and cheese, eggs, and a carton of orange juice you drink straight from the mouth, backwashing pulp. Tonight, couples will gather at someone's house. There will be wine and laughter and looks into a lover's eyes to denote an inside joke. Tonight, you will hunker down in front of television, which provides all the humor you need, the warmth of its glow enough to get you through another day of letting the dishes pile up, the leftovers rotting in cups and plates forming a moldy stench, bold and overpowering. The bachelor makes dinner. I tear open the box of frozen pizza like a gift on Christmas morning. I preheat the oven, stick my hand into the heat, singe my skin on hot metal, and know dinner is ready to be cooked. I set the timer and wait for the buzz to get me up off the couch where I sit and watch old episodes of a comedy show and laugh when I'm supposed to laugh. I pull the pizza out of the oven. The cheese bubbles, the sausage sizzles. I drizzle Louisiana hot sauce on the slice of buttercrusted grease and greatness. I take a bite and my heart dies a little. The bachelor gets ready to attend a wedding. A day to be wedded and wanting. All the birds and trees are trilling to say as much. They are anxious for your big day, or maybe horny after the long brutality of winter. I must agree with all they're saying. A truck turns down a side street and rumbles over potholes. The sound is like a bed rocking from frolicking, though that is not the proper word. I don't know what is. All I know is I still have a pair of pants to iron, a beard to trim, a ceremony to attend under a holy roof and shit-stained glass windows. Bird shit. I can't wait to eat cake and drink champagne, to hug my best friend like a stranger who saved my life from an oncoming train. a real hero among the ranks of the barely living. Your brother, my brother, a true champion for the masses, for the asses in seats watching and cheering the main event, even though the outcome is fixed. I had WrestleMania in my mind near the end of that moment. It just happened this past weekend. It was great and terrible. Holding court. Today I became king of the court without a diamond-encrusted crown thrust upon my sweaty head. Instead, my markings of royalty were the t-shirt draping my body like a robe soaked in champagne, and the pain in my right knee, a sign of a battle endured, my will tested and bested by none, as the ball flew off my hands as swift as an arrow toward the heart of a target, my fingers ringless yet feeling like gold. After the game. Tonight, it's not my legs that ache from running up and down the court for 2 hours, not my knees or calves sore from all the cutting and jumping, the pivots and jab steps, the hustle for a loose ball to turn into points, into a number large enough to call a win. It's the other parts that hurt, my head and heart. My ears you shot words into as harsh as a coach's locker room tongue lashing, claiming the big stage frightened and froze you from playing hard or at all. The intensity and heat of flood and spotlights were too much to bear and best kept off, chalk it up as a loss. The woman I love. The woman I love, I no longer love, but still say it because that's what poets do. The woman I love now loves a man who was a friend, who she's now set to wed in a Veras over several days. He once knocked on the door of a room where I was fucking the woman I love. We were in a cabin in the woods of the Upper Peninsula, which would have been romantic except we were on a dirty bathroom floor, making up after a fight, after I kept drinking shots of tequila despite her protests, after I smacked my face in disgrace, after she cried, after I cried. Then we kissed and fucked with our pants clinging to our ankles. When he knocked, she coughed and made pretend puke sounds, said we were fine, but we weren't. That night, she went to bed early, and I continued to drink by a fire pit under so many stars and satellites, passing a bottle to the man who will wed the woman I love. That night, I fell into the embers of a fire pit and singed my elbow. The burn mark took the shape of the smile or frown of the woman I love, depending on the angle. That night, I began cleaning the fridge, wiping down its doors with a paper towel. I don't remember this, but the man who was set to wed the woman I loved filmed my drunken state doing so. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I kept saying in tears, as I wiped down the refrigerator door while he laughed, and the woman I loved stayed sound asleep. Forged. My brother wore bags over his boots to keep the grease and grime from his time at the steel mill off the carpet and steps he mounted, heaving each foot like a monster born of the graveyard shift, stiff and awkward. His arms smeared with dark matter, the lather of machine and industry, bathing his clothes and face in the glaze of sweat and smoke, oil, and the dirt of what's been done before. The work of uncles and cousins who wore the same jumpsuit, goggles, and gloves to grab hold of cold finished bars using their backs and shoulders to move the weight around. with the help of machines, the knobs to control the 2-ton bundles held by a buckle above the heads of hard-headed men that could snap and let loose the mass of all that metal meant to weld into a foundation, a beginning to build upon when it was his time to work, to clock in clean and leave feeling filthy, no matter the shift or stiffness in the bones creaking like the wooden stairs he climbed. This never happened. You and your boys walk home from school and cut down the alley behind the varnish factory at the end of your block. 4 sophomores who ain't soft, looking hard in hairnets and starter jackets. The cool you exude so heavy, it drags your extra baggy black dickies halfway off your ass, even with the belt on. A banker in a blue Buick drives by and flashes the crown with his left hand. You throw it up right back at him because you're a wannabe, a gonna-be, got brothers and cousins who were born to be kings. When he stops the car and calls you over to the driver's side door, you move like your kin, long lost and now found again. But the reunion ends when he pulls the gun out and presses it to your neck. The .22's cold steel kills the feeling of family, and your boys look on spooked. One ready to run, the other searching for a rock or bottle to throw. He asks who you ride with, what gang you and your boys ran. And when you tell him none, I ain't shit, we ain't shit, and are about to shit your pants because of the pistol and its black leather sleeve still gripping your neck, you remember the leather coat you asked your mom to get you for Christmas like the boys at school. Now you feel the fool tricked by a 2-6, throwing up the crown with the wrong hand to check what set you claim. And cause he's an OG and sees you're nothing but a shorty, scared and shivering in his arms, he warns you and your boys not to hang, not to bang on the corner, cause if he ever saw you, he'd shoot you. Then he lets you loose and drives off slow like a cop who busts you for driving over the speed limit. Your boys crowd you like you've fallen from the sky, and you tell them you all right, forgetting, frightened, but forget him, fuck him. But don't tell your brothers, pretend like this never happened. Traviesos. Traviesos in Spanish like sort of roughly translates to like troublemakers, or at least I think it does. Traviesos. We pass a joint to one another under the cover of hoodies and hairnets. Our bodies perch on Popeye's porch, who's on the corner cracking jokes, clinking bottles with other boys in baggy black clothes. Troublemakers in the eyes of those who don't know any better. You hit it hard and hold your breath. A sea diver sinking into the dark crevices of a cave. And you hand me the wet end of a torch we hope never extinguishes, the way our friendship will years from now. In that passing, we hear a whistle of metal and flame, a buzz in front of our faces. It takes a moment for the coughing to kick in and the click of crosshairs locking into place from across the tracks, where figures in black and beige flash their hands in fury with the hurried tongue of taunt and war. We duck under the stairs, a pair of scared 15-year-olds waiting for the silence to begin, for their fingers to tire a firing on boys who look just like them. When the shooting stalls, we crawl out and I run across the street, up the steps of my own porch, while you take off towards Popeye, your body disappearing around the curve. This is the last poem I'll read. This is for a friend of mine, Fred Sasaki, whose father passed away like very suddenly. And this poem came about like when I helped them clean up his father's apartment one afternoon, and just sort of a lot of things came to came to light for that from that, and especially because I never really had you know, lost someone really close to me yet, and so anyways, this is called Doing Your Dead Father's Dishes for Fred Sasaki. As I washed away the backwash of your father's glass, the offering plate for your grandmother's ashes, which held fruit so old and moldy, the apple and orange hardened into a plastic feel, and the last bits of his spit clinging to a cold metal spoon, tongue smooth, of the ice cream it once scooped. I thought I was cleaning my hands with his spittle and spirit, lathering my skin with the dust of his dead cells. I know that's lurid and morbid to say, maybe more than you care to bear, but my mother is still alive, and my father is unknown to me and could be a ghost as well. Still, I haven't had to clean the kitchen of a lost loved one, to scrub away the grime of leftovers, to strip the bed of its sheets and pillows, only to see the yellow outline of what was your father's sweat, the night he turned and twisted under the blanket, feeling the heat of dreams press onto his skull. I imagine him waking from a hot sleep and drinking a full glass of water in one gulp for luck and constitution purposes. I imagine him pulling back the curtains to look onto the lake while stretching the bones of his skeleton, his arms reaching for ceiling, straining to gain back the inches shed and lost. The light of the sun flooding into his room as it slowly rises over an expanse of water blue and seemingly endless. Thanks.